entertained? Are you not entertained? Is this not why you are here?
Hello and welcome, ladies and gents, to another episode of East Coast Bias. Today is Monday, July 9th, 2007, and we have a great show for you guys. In today's show, we wrap up a soggy Wimbledon. We hand out our ECB midseason MLB awards. We begin our NFL divisional preview and finally end the show and give you folks your weekly fill. Let's first go across the pond and run down what happened at the All England Club. For the women, Venus Williams won the Wimbledon, and she won in straight sets. Basically, you know, blew away the competition in the women's racket. And Roger Federer, of course, won his fifth Wimbledon, tying him for Bjorn Borg, as the only two men who have ever won Wimbledon five straight years in a row. What did you think of the match, Jason? I know you got to see more of it than I did.
I want, just to correct you, five straight is the record for consecutive. Sampras actually has seven Wimbledons. But it was a great match. I think it was good for tennis. And like, hopefully it'll be something that can rejuvenate a dying sport, especially in this country. And it was very interesting. You know, it was good that it went five sets. Roger Federer has never gone five sets in Wimbledon in his career. So it definitely showed that Nadal was ready for the competition. With Federer, you know, it didn't come easy. And in the past, we've seen Federer rolling over his competition. The first and third sets that he won were in tiebreakers.
Yeah.
So he couldn't break Nadal, and Nadal had problems breaking him.
Yeah, and Federer was just, I mean, the guy is... will probably be the best men's tennis player of all time. I mean, he's appeared now in 9 consecutive Grand Slam finals. He's won 7 of them. He's won 34 consecutive matches at Wimbledon, which is like a staggering achievement. And he's recorded 54 straight matches on grass now. So,
and I what mean, you just said,
Nadal was up against, I mean, one of the greatest players of all time, Federer. And I think the fact that Nadal took this to five sets was a good thing for Nadal, and it was a good thing, like you said, for tennis, where this may end up being, you know, a catalyst for tennis to become a thing in the United States that we enjoy watching again, much like when we enjoyed watching Pete Sampras and Andre Agassi play.
You know, Nadal really did have a chance to win that match and really should have won it. One of the impressions you got was in the fourth set when Federer was up 2-1 in terms of sets. The play was even, you know, in terms of, you know, with serving, Federer served, Nadal, you know, both being controlling their serve. But then Nadal won the fourth set very easily. Federer complained about a Hawkeye call. The Hawkeye is the one where it's kind of like the instant replay for tennis.
Okay.
And he actually, it was kind of stupid on his part. He was complaining about instant replay. And when everybody in the crowd sees that the ball was in, he was, you know, he wanted the Hawkeye not to be on. He didn't want it. So it was, and you never see that in Federer. You know, like, you never see him break his stride. So, and after that easy four-set victory by Nadal, 6-2, you know, you thought he was starting to get in his kitchen. But that's the greatness of Federer. You know, fifth set, even though Nadal had two chances, he was up 15-40 in two Federer games, where if he would have broke, he would have went up two games. He would have been up 4-2. But instead, he couldn't take advantage of those opportunities. Federer then easily broke Nadal's serve at 3-2, and that was the difference in the match.
I wanted to ask you one question before we move on. Nadal, only a month past his 21st birthday. I mean, now he's, you know, legally able to drink now. At least in the United States, that is. Really, you know, like we said, really gave Federer a run for his money. Federer, a lot of people are saying, could be the greatest, but isn't because he hasn't won yet at the French Open. Do you see Federer as being the best at the end of his career, even if he never wins a French Open
yes.
title?
You know, the French Open's such a different animal. And especially in today's age, you know, players back then were more well-rounded.
Right.
And if he's at 11 majors already, I never looked at Pete Sampras as being that great, and maybe that had to do with his personality, just, you know, much in the same...
But you realize why he is, right? I mean,
Okay. You know, 14 majors
right.
isn't anything.
Grand
Slams isn't anything to scoff at, but... you know, at least in majors, he's going to break 14. But what will hurt him in terms of his legacy is the level of competition around him.
It's
inferior. But to give credit to Nadal, maybe if Federer wasn't playing in this age or in the same time, I know that's not a great thing to think about if you're
right.
Nadal, you know, hoping somebody wasn't playing when you're playing. But he would be... He's very underestimated.
Yeah, and you know, he's still got a couple more years till he hits his prime, much like Federer did. But do you see Nadal taking Wimbledon next year, with Federer being a year older and Nadal being a year wiser next
no.
year? You still see Federer taking Wimbledon next year?
This is why people have to understand what Nadal is doing out there. That is Nadal's worst surface. He wants nothing to do with a slow court.
Right, but worse surface, but he still made Federer go
the
distance.
Well, okay, let me explain myself. Maybe that it says a lot to where the men's tennis game is, that nobody can challenge either one of them. But my point is, give him better shots at the U.S. Open and the Australian Open, and hands-down favorite, the French.
Right.
And I think Wimbledon's just below that slightly.
Okay.
Because... You know, there are some big servers in today's game where Wimbledon's what they thrive on.
Okay.
If you understand that point.
I pretty much get the drift that you're saying.
But hands down to Federer, great accomplishment. And
yeah,
can't say enough
about him.
Well, Major League Baseball is at the All-Star break, but we at ECB never take a break. And with that mentality in mind, we are going to wrap up the first half of the season with our mid-season awards. We will start with the NL MVP. Couple guys you consider. Brendan, who you got for NL MVP?
As for my NL MVP, I had to take Matt Holliday. I mean, Holliday's just having a better all-around impact than Prince Fielder is, who I think that's who you took. I mean, Fielder's only batting .232 with runners in scoring position, and only .154 in those situations with two outs, while Holliday is batting .319 with runners in scoring position, and get this, is batting .368 with two outs with runners in scoring position, and Matt Holliday is second in batting average in the NL, and second in RBIs with 69. I mean, the guy is just
on fire. I hate to call you out, you know, while we're doing a podcast,
right.
But you're crazy, man.
Crazy.
You really are crazy. There's something wrong in your head a little...
You're going to start talking about the Coors Field impact, huh?
Exactly. Okay. You know, you read my mind. See, if you want to give this award to Coors Field, go ahead.
He's batting
He's batting
301 away from Coors Field.
Oh, that's great.
So you know.
But let's subtract 20 RBIs, 5 home runs, uh-huh. 20-30 points off the batting average. Then that's where Matt Holliday is this year.
Okay.
Like I said, if you want to give it the MVP to Coors Field, go ahead. Because, man, that place hits.
All right. Well, who do you have?
You know.
Who do you have?
I have the Prince.
You have the Prince. Okay.
The obvious choice. And NL is kind of, a little lackluster in terms of that. I think it would be a little stretch. I've heard people say Jose Reyes. I think that's a little of a stretch because his on-base percentage isn't that great. Sure, the stolen bases, he might be going for 100, which is something rare. Especially nowadays,
right?
You know, it's something rare. You know, there's no more Ricky Henderson's running the bases. But I go with Fielder. the Brewers in first place. One of the things with MVPs is I like to pick them from good teams. That's one of the problems I have with mentioning A-Rod for AL MVP, which we will get into.
Okay.
Just to get into his stats a little, 27 home runs leads the NL. Second in RBIs, third in extra base hits, sixth in runs with 59, and second percentage behind Barry Bonds. Only thing, the average is not great, 284.
But not bad, but I mean, he is a...
Single-handedly,
he is a
beast. Reminds you of Ryan Howard, kind of right. What Ryan did last year.
Right. I mean, 284 for... I mean, 284 for a guy who has that much power is, you know, is pretty good. So, I mean, I don't have a problem with you picking him. I just don't see him. I just see that batting average with runners in scoring position, and I just think with Matt Holliday being
on a series
at least 100 points higher in both respects, actually 200 points better than runners in scoring position with two outs, I just see Matt Holliday running away with NL MVP right now.
To be serious about Matt Holliday for a second, just joking around.
Right.
You know, like I mentioned, I have a problem with selecting a Rocky for what? Are they?
Yeah, but a lot of people do.
And he's had a great season. He's had a great season. And if we're talking about, you know, we're talking about midseason award, which you can interpret differently, especially when we're talking about the actual awards, which will be in September, October. That's more based on playoff teams, and you know what I mean? That's kind of factored into
right.
it more. So, you know, he's had a tremendous year. There's no question about that. I just think what Prince has done in, what, his second year, I believe?
Right.
Has been tremendous.
But Holliday is, by the way, hitting 400 at Coors Field, very Ted Williams-like. So, just wanted to throw that out there.
That does prove my point.
Okay. Who do you have for AL MVP?
Obvious choices here are Maglio and A-Rod. A-Rod, like
oh,
I
those
mentioned.
Are obvious choices. So, who did you pick?
Well, I like to be a little different.
Okay.
I like to be the voice of reason
you
of
mean,
East Coast bias.
Okay.
I'm a solutions-oriented guy. I went with Vladimir Guerrero.
So you picked the guy that John Kruk picked on Baseball Tonight. That's
if you're telling me John Kruk took him, then hey, I like that company.
Well, that's
I
have to say it's a pretty obvious choice. But go ahead.
I like his nickname, Vlad the Impaler.
That's a good nickname.
325 batting average, 14 home runs, a little less than Vlad, like since he has hit 30 or more in the last seven seasons.
He does tend to have a little bit less help than. Ordonez,
let me get into that.
Rodriguez
thanks for stealing
has.
My thunder, but
no
let
problem.
Me get into that.
No problem.
75 RBIs, top 10 in all major statistical categories in the AL. You mentioned it. I don't see support in that lineup. They brought in Gary Matthews Jr., who I thought the Angels thought that he would be that guy,
right.
Kind of the protection. Right now, he hasn't been. He's had a decent season. But right now, they're kind of counting on younger players, Koch, Trin Willits.
Well, I mean,
you know, Figgins and Cabrera.
Cabrera and Figgins are getting on base, so.
But that's not protection for Vlad, and they're not run driving in players.
Well, it's not like you can walk Vladimir Guerrero. I mean, he hits balls at wherever the ball goes. I mean, he'll hit one that bounces first in front of the plate, and then on the rebound he'll hit that for a 3-run home run. I mean, it's not like his guy has any weakness around the plate or anything.
In the same principles as the fielder pick. Other than J.J. Hardy, I'm not scared of anybody in the Brewers lineup, and that's kind of the point I'm making with Vlad. It's Vlad and everybody else,
well, who,
to me.
Okay. Well, I picked Maglio Ordonez. I mean, if assuming he finishes at the current clip he's on right now, he's going to finish with 68 doubles, 369 average, 137 RBIs, 135 runs scored, and 93 extra base hits to go along with a 445 OBP and a 1.053 OPS. Now,
how many All-Stars does the Angels Vladimir Guerrero play with?
Probably zero.
Well, actually, it's
well,
one.
Well,
no, you're right.
Cabrera?
It is zero because, no, he didn't make
That's
it.
That's right, Cabrera didn't make it.
And Detroit has two. Sheffield and Pudge off the top of my head, and Polanco.
Polanco, like you said, does not give protection to Magdaleno Ordóñez. Neither does Ivan Rodriguez. Gary Sheffield, I'll give you that. Gary Sheffield does provide protection for Magdaleno Ordóñez. But we're talking about Matt Holliday and his batting averages, runners in scoring position. That's not even close to what Maglio was hitting. 443 with runners in scoring position. 443.
There's not much you can say about that.
Let that sink in for a little bit.
Look,
first in batting average, first in OBP, fourth in RBIs and runs.
Preaching to the choir, buddy. Okay, but you know Maglio is the leader in the clubhouse, so to speak, for MVP in the
right.
AL. I'm not disputing that. I kind of went with Vlad. I like to be a little different, and I think he's underrated in this, and I haven't heard many people say. Apparently, Kruk brought it up, like you said. But
yeah.
No doubt about it, Maglio's having a great season on a great team.
Yeah, and I think Magdaleno Ordóñez, he's certainly not going to finish with those statistics that I mentioned. A guy just can't, you know, do that for you know, an entire season. But, I mean, he's going to be very good, and I think he has a very good chance. Both him and Vlad have a very good chance of winning AL MVP towards the end of the year.
NL Cy Young, who
right.
you got, Brent?
NL Cy Young, I have Jake Peavy. I mean, first in strikeouts, first in whip, 15 quality starts. And I know you're probably going to pick Brad Penny because, I mean, there's not really anyone else unless you want to consider maybe John Main or Cole Hamels. But Jake Peavy has a better K-to-walk ratio than Penny does. And Jake Peavy is 3 points higher with Ks per nine innings pitched. And Jake Peavy has only given up 17 extra base hits this season. 17. That's incredible. It's incredible statistic.
Jake
right
Peavy
there.
Is the ace of the NL. No doubt about that. In my head, it's a three-man race. You threw it. You know, I am going to take Penny. I'll get to
right.
him.
Right.
You could take, for Cy Young, you could take C. Young. Chris Young of the Padres. You like that little play on words there,
bro? That was a good one, yeah.
Thank you. Because 2.0 ERA, 9-3.
Right.
But again, you know, Peavy's better than Young. And their teammates. But like I said, I'm going to go with the Dodger, Brad Penny. Best win percentage 10-1. Third in ERA in the NL, 2.39. 15 quality starts, which ties him with Peavy.
With Ty, yes.
You know, but all the other statistics, innings, strikeouts, the edges to Peavy, runs given up.
Then why pick Brad Penny?
Well, because we like to be different, Brendan. We like to give a alternating opinion,
but you're basically agreeing
and Penny
with me.
Penny is very qualified.
I certainly agree.
I
that
can
Penny
agree and disagree at the same time, Brendan. I'm multifaceted.
But I think
here,
Jake
okay?
Peavy's even. I think Jake Peavy is an even better choice because of the fact that the Dodgers have a much better lineup than the Padres do, and the fact that Jake Peavy even has 9 wins. When the San Diego Padres are pretty much dead last in every team batting statistic is incredible.
True.
So
I can't dispute that.
No, you can't. But
you know,
I certainly think, yes, I agree. Penny's certainly qualified to be it. And it'll be interesting to see how both of them both pitch down the stretch, especially with Peavy not getting a whole lot of run support. So who do you have in for the AL Cy Young? This can go.
I would actually,
a lot of places.
If you don't mind, I would like you to go first because then I can bash your pick.
Okay,
so
no
why
problem.
Why don't you go first on this?
No problem. I picked Dan Heron, pitcher for the Oakland Athletics. I mean, the guy ripped off 13 straight quality starts. 13 straight. His greatest feat of all is that he was the first pitcher since Pedro Martinez in 2000 to take a sub 2.00 ERA into July. And opponents are batting 153 against Heron with runners in scoring position. I just think that Dan Heron is the consensus here. And if you try to, you know, I don't think anyone else really could match Darren Heron.
I got a question
for
you
here. Yeah.
What team does Dan Heron play for?
Dan Heron for Oakland Athletics.
you happen to know what the record is? I'll tell you.
That, is that is that his fault?
No, but is they're 44 and 44.
Okay.
And typically, you go with guys who are on winning teams. This goes back to my fielder pick.
Okay.
So, for that reason, I pick a team with 52 wins.
Right.
CC Sabathia.
Okay.
The numbers are there. 15 quality starts, 12-3, first in wins, second in innings pitched and complete games, fourth in strikeouts. When you compare the two, Heron has the edge in quality starts. Actually, Sabathia's 13, excuse me. Heron is killing the field in quality starts, 17 to everybody else's 13.
Yeah, I did mention that he did rip off 13 in a row, so he should have more than anyone else does in the AL.
However, CC does have 14 less walks than Heron.
Ooh, which, 14. Ooh.
Yeah, which, oh, that's a lot of walks, man. Think about that. Let that fact soak in.
Well, who's got a lower ERA? Thank you.
That would be be Dan Heron.
Thank you.
Who has a better team?
The Indians. I mean, it's Grady Sizemore, Travis Hafner.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
it's Dan Heron doesn't have a lot of, you know, is not going to get run support when he pitches.
I'm not going to give my Cy Young to a team that's in third place in the AL West.
Why?
AL West is so garbage this year.
Okay, well, we've discussed what MVP means. Does Cy Young necessarily mean the most valuable pitcher on the team or the best pitcher in baseball? That would be Dan Heron. Hands down.
In baseball? Wow, you're going
in baseball.
Both lakes here.
Better than Jake Peavy, better than Brad Penny, better than CC Sabathia. Dan Heron is unarguably the best pitcher in the major leagues right now.
Well, I like the big guys, so I got to go with CC. All
right.
And we'll see which team's making the playoffs in September.
Okay, well, besides the fact that we won't
I know that has nothing to do with it.
Right.
But I'm right in that one. You're wrong. So.
Okay. Well,
anyway.
Lastly, let's talk about the best NL and AL teams right now at the break. For me, I'm going to start off the AL team, and I don't think it gets much better than the Detroit Tigers. I'm first in batting average, runs, OPS, and on the pitching side, they're fifth in ERA, first in saves, and seventh in quality starts. I just think that the Detroit Tigers are a force to be reckoned with in the American League, and I think are going to have a chance to, you know, become World Series winners this year. What do you think?
With what they did last year, Tigers are a great pick. They've won five in a row, which got them past the Indians for the lead in the Central. Runs scored most in the AL,
right.
So, you know, and I like to use what a team did the year before as kind of to give advantages to teams.
Okay.
So your Tigers pick would be right on that line. You know, they're having a great season, and by the way, they lost in the World Series.
Right.
So the success has been there. Just to feel different, I don't, you know, they are, the team I'm picking from the AL is a game behind for overall lead in the AL.
Okay.
And that would be the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. 53-35, 29-13 at home. More importantly, you know, we went through the Vlad situation. And I guess if I'm picking the Angels, I hope that that subpar batting lineup that I was talking about kind of helps out Vlad. But it's the pitching that's great. We've mentioned before, Lackey's,
Kelvin
Cologne,
Escobar.
Escobar.
Cologne's
Santana.
Not having a very good season this year, coming
no, he's
off
not.
His 2005 Cy Young season, so be interesting to see how Cologne. Oh yeah, you can't argue with the
Shields
with the closer.
And K-Rod.
Yeah, you can't argue with the bullpen.
And this kind of brings me into my NL pick, which I'll go first on that.
Go ahead.
I am going to go, call me crazy, and I actually you should call me crazy.
I will.
Best NL team is the Los Angeles Dodgers.
Okay, good, because I thought you were going to pick the Mets.
No, I can't do that. But 49-40, a game behind the Padres. You know, if you look at the batting average, second in the NL in batting average, which whenever you're talking Dodgers of the past, that has been the Achilles heel. They're hitting. They've never been able to get a lineup going. I like the bounce. I took a look at the average. I like the lineup. Russell Martin, Juan Pierre, Nomar.
Do you like Jeff Kent and Nomar Garciaparra, two aging veterans on that team? Do you think they're actually going to be able to perform down the stretch?
Yes, because I like the balance of what they have. I like the two guys of speed, Juan Pierre and Furcal, who can get on base.
Right.
I like that you can count on RBIs from a couple different guys. Russell Martin, who's come out of nowhere.
Yeah, I mean, really. I mean, talk about the next Mike Piazza. I mean, Russell Martin has maybe become
one of the best
offensive catchers to date. And, I mean, he's certainly on his way to becoming that.
The biggest question will be, you know, we talked about Penny. Penny's been an ace for him.
Who
Derek
else?
Lowe. Derek Lowe's had experience. He's been there, done that.
Well, in the playoffs.
No, the numbers are good. Third starter, Randy Wolf. This is where we start getting into problems. if they had a healthy Jason Schmidt, which was their big offseason acquisition, I would have no problem, without hesitation, saying this is an elite, elite team.
But do you think that they're in the end? I mean, they are still. Do you think they're going to win the West, or do you think they're going to fall behind and take the wild card?
I think they're a wild card team.
Okay.
I really like the Padres this year. It's just something special about it's one of those teams where, you know, they keep having these hitting problems and they're finally getting the hitting.
Right.
That they've so desperately been looking for in the past.
Yeah. And, you know, speaking of the Padres, that's who I have as the best NL team. I know I did mention that they are almost dead to last in every batting statistic, but I really think that with the we talked about this on Friday with the acquisition of Milton Bradley and catcher Michael Barrett, I really think that's going to help their offense become at least a little bit better. But I mean, you can't say enough about this pitching staff with Chris Young, Jake Peavy, Greg Maddux, David Wells, first in ERA, WHIP, and quality starts. Third in batting average against and saves. I mean, these guys, are just on a roll right now. And with that pitching staff, it's just going to be hard to score any runs on these guys. And that's why that even if the San Diego Padres just get a little bit better on offense, they're going to be a force to be reckoned with.
They better, man. You look at those averages; they're sickening.
I agree.
I don't know if it's that. With Marcus and Brian Giles playing on the same team, it's killing both of them because Marcus Giles has been a good player, 290, 280
for
every year he's played for the Braves, and he's batting like 240 something. You know, how did that happen? Giles, he's played in like half the games. His injuries have been a problem, and that was the guy you've counted on in the past if you're a Padres fan. So, you know, that definitely the biggest question mark will be the hitting. You know, you mentioned the pitching.
Right, and I just think that, I think the Padres win the NL West, but like I just said, I mean, their offense is going to have to get a lot better because right now they're winning because of pitching. And even if they get some timely hitting, they'll
be much
better.
To wrap up sorry to cut you off there.
It's okay, no problem.
To wrap up our picks, just so we have a little fresher.
Right.
NL MVP, Prince Fielder for me, Vlad. AL MVP, NL Cy Young, Brad Penny, CC Sabathia, AL Cy Young. And my best AL and NL teams were both from Los Angeles, Angels and Dodgers.
My AL MVP, Maggie Ordonez. NL MVP was Matt Holliday. My two Cy Youngs, Dan Heron from the AL, Jake Peavy in the NL. And my two best teams from the AL and NL, San Diego Padres from the National League and the Detroit Tigers from the American League. But now let's segue into this will be a 8-week segment entitled Countdown to Kickoff. We'll be running this will be an 8-week segment. We will be running down every division in the NFL, and this week we'll be starting with the NFC East with our hometown Philadelphia Eagles. What do you think, Jason? What do you think of the NFC East, and how do you think that's going to break down this year?
Above average division. Last year, it was the best division in the NFL with three playoff teams.
Right.
This year, it's not going to be that great. I see it as a two-man race with Philly and Dallas being 1-2.
I couldn't agree more. I think the Giants are going to be... I think between the Redskins and the Giants, they both have equal opportunity to go 3-4. It could be a combination of either. Because the Giants just got so much worse because of the loss of Tiki Barber to retirement. And I do not believe in Eli Manning. And it's not because I dislike the guy. I just don't think he's a good quarterback. And I don't like Jeremy Shockey, and I don't like Plaxico Burress. I think Plaxico mouths off too much and, you know, lacks, you know, effort, and Jeremy Shockey can't keep his big mouth shut. So,
come to think of it, if you look at the quarterback situations in all these teams, there is problems everywhere.
Right.
If you're an Eagles fan,
not so much with the Eagles and the Cowboys though.
I don't know.
Oh, come on. Listen.
Are you really? Listen.
Don't be a homer. Tony Romo had a 95.1 quarterback rating. The guy is going to be at least a decent quarterback.
Okay, let me tell you this, though.
Okay.
First seven games, teams aren't used to him, right?
Right.
So they don't know what to expect from him. They go 5-2. What did those last five games he do? 1-4.
I understand that.
Unimpressive. So teams started seeing him, getting used to that sidearm delivery, three-quarter sidearm delivery. I don't know. He's got to prove something to me. A half a year, 10 games doesn't really show me that much.
Okay, well, who do you have 1-4 in the NFC East for the 2007-2008 season?
First will be the Eagles, completely dependent on the health of McNabb, of course. If McNabb's healthy, has the standard year that McNabb's capable of having, there's no reason this team can't go to the Super Bowl. Second, the Cowboys. Eagles, if I had to put a win total on, I would say 11. 11-5 would be a nice number. Cowboys, I seem to be the only person in America who has a little problem with Tony Romo and what he can do next year. But I have them 10-6. The weapons on the offense are hard to ignore. Giants, I have third.
Okay.
You mentioned Eli Manning. Three Dog Night in the 70s had a song, Eli's Coming. Well, if you're a Giants fan, you better hope that's true. Because I don't see it. He doesn't have that same tenacity in which Peyton brings to the table. You know, Peyton's the one out there calling the shots, changing plays, flipping plays, you know, that sort of thing. And Eli's that quiet guy, and he's going to have to be more assertive. And, you know, losing Tiki, that was the source of the offense last
right.
year. So much, there's a lot of pressure on Eli this year.
I totally agree.
Fourth coming up in the rear, 7-9, I'll think, for the Redskins, which would be an improvement. And again, it comes down to Jason Campbell.
Right.
What can he show us? And now, I believe... No, it is his first full season, I believe.
Yeah, started. He took over for Mark Brunell in Week 11
yes.
last year.
Okay.
And, I mean, he appears to be a lock to start for the Skins this year. So, I mean, I'm going to go, instead of 1-4, I'm going to go 4-1. I agree with you. I think the Washington Redskins are going to be in the cellar of the NFC East this year. Liddell Betts, last year, great season. They're going to have a nice problem there with Clinton Portis and Liddell Betts in the backfield. But
there's no problem there.
No,
there's
none.
Well, because Clinton Portis is leaps and bounds better than Liddell Betts. And Clinton Portis is a top four running back in my eyes.
If he's healthy.
Sorry, I have a strong opinion about Clinton.
It's okay. But, I mean, the tight end Chris Cooley played well last year. Santana Moss was...
They got some weapons
all
on the
right.
outside.
Yeah, they do, but their defense is, I mean, to say the least,
yeah, that's
not very good. I mean,
Randall L., Brandon Lloyd, and Santana Moss, on paper, you know, you would think it's a good 1-2-3 receiver.
Yeah, not that great. But, and I mean, the Redskins on defense, only 19 sacks last season. I mean, that just is not going to get it done. And they have a pretty good secondary. Sean Springs, Carlos Rogers, if he matures, will become huge for the secondary. And they drafted LeRon Landry to roam around in the backfield with
Which
Sean
will be good.
Taylor.
That'll be a very good safety.
Yeah, arguably the best safety tandem in the NFL. But, I mean, if the Skins can't get any pressure on the quarterback, then, I mean, it doesn't matter. We saw what happens when you can't get pressure on the quarterback with the Eagles, where, you know, Dawkins, Shepard, and Brown were all getting torched because, I mean, you just cannot stay on a guy for 10 seconds. It just can't be done. So it will be interesting to see how the secondary performs if the Skins can't get any pressure on the quarterback. The Skins I have going 6-10. They're going to be probably around 2-4 in that versus the NFC East. And next, number three, like you had, I have the Giants, Tiki Barber, this leaving this offseason and for to pursue his, I guess, his television career is going to be huge. Like I said, not a huge fan of Eli Manning. Brandon Jacobs, I think, is a nice back, but he's just not. He doesn't have that second motor when he hits that second level, and I just don't think he's going to be able to break away from anyone.
He's a big physical back, and yeah. You know, Tiki gave you that shiftiness.
Yeah, he's just not elusive.
Tiki, we will be seeing Tiki on Sunday Night Football on NBC.
It'll be interesting to see him. Yeah, again. But, I mean, they still have a good defense. Michael Strahan, who was injured last year, will be healthy again. Usi Umenyora, great defensive end. Linebacking core solid with Antonio Pierce anchoring the middle. Had 140 tackles last year. And they're moving Matthias Kiwanuka to the outside linebacker role, where he probably should have been last year. And he's probably going to be a lot more effective there. The big problem with the Giants is their secondary. Andrew Walter and the Raiders couldn't have been able to pick these guys apart. They're just, I mean, with the exception of Will Demps, there isn't an above-average defensive back on that team.
They did try to address that.
They addressed it in the draft with Aaron Ross.
They drafted a guy like Aaron Ross from Texas.
Well, the only reason you like him is because he's from Texas.
You'll see. He'll be a player in this league. You wait and see.
Well, not too many other people were high on him. But
Jason Mish is, and that's all that matters.
Well, with the Giants, their record of that I have will probably be around 7-9. Probably going to go 2-4 or 3-3 versus the NFC East. So I just think the Giants aren't going to be able to get out of that third spot. They may even end up last, like I said. But it'll be interesting to see how the Giants respond this year to, you know, Barber leaving and Tom Coughlin coming back. Second, I have the boys. I don't think...
How about them Cowboys?
I don't think it gets much better with Terry Glenn, Terrell Owens, at the wide receiver position. I know they're getting older. I still think they're going to be effective. Good defense. DeMarcus Ware, 11.5 sacks last year. Brady James, 103 tackles, middle linebacker. However, Terrence Newman did not live up to his shutdown corner label last year. He only picked off one pass. Although Pat Watkins did emerge as a solid safety, and he looks to build off that success in order to help Roy Williams do what he does best, and that's hit people.
Let me just jump in here.
I didn't say Pat Watkins was going to be like a fantastic safety. All I said was that he emerged as a solid safety.
You won't see him starting next year.
Really?
And another point is, please don't make fun of Terrence Newman. Just because sometimes the numbers lie. And we've talked about with
Pac-Man.
Whoa.
Numbers don't
sometimes
lie. If you're an elite corner, you're going to pick off more than one pass.
Okay.
There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. I understand that. I understand if a guy has six picks.
Yeah, but what if I said to that before? Okay, you have Terrence Newman and Anthony Henry. Who are you going to throw at if you're a quarterback?
Anthony Henry. Right, but
exactly.
No. That's in man-to-man. There is this thing called zone where Terrence Newman had the opportunity to pick off more than one pass last season.
Okay, well, I'm glad you know the Cowboys playbook. Okay.
I do. Me and Wade Phillips.
Oh, okay. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Good friends?
Every day. I got them on speed dial. I could get them on here right now.
I'm glad you're friends with a subpar coach.
Subpar head coach, and that's one of the other things that I'm not too high on with the Cowboys, and is why I have them behind the Eagles, because I'm not a big Wade Phillips guy, and I think the fact that they got Bill Parcells is no longer with them is huge, and the Cowboys, I have them going 10-6, 4-2 versus the NFC East, and I think that the Cowboys, if Tony Romo doesn't live up to what he did last season, will struggle. And I think that the Philadelphia Eagles,
who, of course, you were getting on me. You were getting on me for saying that about Tony Romo.
All I'm saying is that Tony Romo, if he struggles, I'm not saying he's going to. I'm saying if he does struggle, then the Cowboys are going to have a problem because they have no quarterback depth at all. None. Now, let me continue. I have the Philadelphia Eagles at number one, of course, barring any injuries this year. I mean, the Eagles have to catch a break eventually, and I think they're going to catch a break this year. Donovan McNabb was having an MVP season last year. Brian Westbrook broke 1,000 yards last year rushing for the first time in his career. 5.1 yards per carry. Huge. And Javon Kearse, 3.5 sacks in 2 games last year. If he stayed healthy, he would have had a monster year last year, and no one would be questioning the contract that we gave him when we signed him from the Titans. I think, and my big thing on offense, is I think Reggie Brown is going to become a bona fide, legit number one wide receiver. And I like the inclusion of Takiyo Spikes. I think he's going to be a huge help to Jeremiah Trotter. I like the signing of defensive tackle Ian Scott. He should help greatly in the running game. And the emergence of Trent Cole, Sean Considine, and Omar Gaither last year as consistent performers, I think will make the Eagles much better on the defensive side of the ball. And my last thing with the Eagles is I would love to see Ryan Moat start returning punts and kickoffs. Because, I mean, watching Rio Mahe get run down in that one game on that kickoff, where any other person would have ran that back for a touchdown, and he was caught. It just made me sick, and I can't stand Reno Mahe returning anything on special teams anymore. And finally, I mean, I think the Eagles are going to go 11-5 this year, maybe 12-4. Their schedule isn't that tough, and they're great. I think they're going to do great against NFC East. I think they'll go 5-1. They have to lose at least one. I don't think the NFC East is bad enough where the Eagles sweep the division.
To remind some of our listeners, next week we will be featuring the NFC North for our countdown to kickoff segment, we like to call it. So look forward to that. And we have our NFC East information up on our website to check out.
Yeah, you should make sure you check that out, mishencanny.blogspot.com. Make sure you guys look at that very interesting article written by myself, Brennan Canny.
To go on to our last segment, it is the Weekly Phil, and this week will be Phillies related, as it will be for most of the summer. And yesterday, the Phillies prevented the sweep from the Colorado Rockies, but also stopped themselves from becoming the first team in professional sports with 10,000 losses. They also had an interesting thing with a rain delay yesterday. Either of one of those would you like to bring up, Brendan?
Oh, that rain delay, I don't even know what you would call what happened in Colorado. It's just
monsoon.
I guess that'd be the best thing to call it. I mean, seeing that guy, that one ground crew guy, get lifted off the ground was incredible. And I thought it was a great. I think it was a great thing that the Phillies came out and helped them. Even the Rockies didn't come out and help.
Yeah, what was the deal with that? That's my problem.
Yeah,
man.
I didn't understand that at all.
If this is Citizens Bank Park, then the Phillies have some obligation. But this is Coors Field, and only LaTroy Hawkins of the Rockies came out to help. And the whole team's out there pouring rain. You know, even Adam Eaton was doing the best job. He was actually pulling the tarp over the field. But it was just something you rarely see, and it was good to see that.
Yeah, and about the 10,000 win loss thing, it'd be nice if it was wins. 10,000 loss thing is that, I mean, their first loss, I believe, came in 1894 or something. So, I mean, the Phillies franchise has been around for a long time. So, it's not like the Phillies have been started a team in 1940. And just have been awful ever since it came in the league. I mean, they've been around for a while. I mean, they've been around the block. So, I think the 10,000 win thing is, I mean, it's humorous and funny, but I don't think it really... I don't think it's that big of a deal either.
And the sports writers have been so on it.
Well, it's, you know it's summer, it's just baseball. You know, it's a slow news season. And there's not a whole lot to talk about, and what better thing to do than, you know, root against the Phillies.
It should be mentioned that the Phillies have won more games than 21 other major league teams, which, you know, in that context, it's not that bad.
Right.
And a quote by Brett Myers, which I like, is, "We've won 8,800 games. Who cares?" You know?
Right.
So, I mean, like you said, it's right. not like they...
Yeah, and
you
I'm
know,
sure were... those guys are getting sick of, you know, having
so
to
let's
answer,
just hope...
those, answer those sports writers.
Let's just hope they lose their next game after the break so we can get this over
and
with.
Just get is there next game? I can't remember. Is there next series after the All-Star break at home?
Yes, it is.
Because I really didn't...
I believe so.
I don't want them to have that 10,000 win. Maybe it's better that they have that 10,000 loss at home rather than somewhere else? Or would you rather see them... You'd rather see it at an away game?
I'd rather see it in an away game. I think it would be... You know, because you'd hear booing. You know,
it'd
that's
be the first thing we'd have to celebrate in a long time, though. You know?
If you want to look at it that way, sure.
Because, I mean, the Phillies haven't had a whole lot to get excited about. The last time we were in the postseason was in 1993 when we went to the World Series and lost.
And Mitch Williams did a great job.
Yeah.
Blowing that game to Joe
Carter.
Yeah,
kind of a hard thing to, you know, get over.
Swallow, yeah.
But, you know, that is the life of a Philadelphia fan, regardless of what sport it is. The Eagles, the Flyers, we get there and we lose, and they break our hearts. But,
24 years since our last professional, you know, major sport championship.
Longest of any current franchise right now, right?
Of any major city, you
right?
Mean,
with
yes.
four, at least four professional teams.
Mm-hmm.
And with that, boys and girls, we have run out of topics. Like Tank Johnson has run out of chances. Me and Jason want to thank all the listeners and subscribers. As you guys keep us motivated to do this every week. Lastly, I wanted to mention that myself and Jason will be on 610 WIP Sports Radio doing the morning show with Angelo Cataldi. So tune in on Tuesday morning, July 17th. Again, this was East Coast Biased, hosted by myself, Brennan Canny.
And Jason Mish.
And we look forward to talking to you guys on Friday.
Peace out.